Hey friends, it's been a while since I've done this podcast, but I'm trying to reduce the friction. I've really, really fallen in love with the Blind Boy podcast. I don't know if you listened to Blind Boy, lovely Irish fellow who just really takes his time meandering about a particular topic that is thoroughly researched and nuanced, and there are all these emergent moments within the podcast, and I realize I particularly like that, and and I'd like to do more of that, but today's episode is going to be a little more succinct. I just wanted to highlight something quite horrifying and delightful that happened to me recently. Although even right now I have many tendrils that are emerging in terms of where this can go. There's still a large part of me that grieves for what's happening in Palestine and what's happening in our world at large. There's the passing of Joanna Macy, and a joy that comes with just the honouring of her work the work that reconnects, and that I could talk about a story medicine night that I've gone to run by my friend Vaz Clementine. There's a bunch of things I could talk to you about, but I want to focus on something a little bit more mundane. The other day, I don't know about you, but I'm finding that July has just been jam-packed for me with regards to meetings and social. I'm back at the point of looking at my calendar, and I don't know, maybe this is an elaborate form of self-sabotage to avoid writing the book, although I feel like I'm actively writing this next book for you, even when I'm not writing it. And partly this book that I want to write you has required me to dissolve a lot of a lot of the parts of me that weren't serving whom I need to become in order to effectively write this book for you. But yeah, this month is really quite busy, but I was quite proud of myself a couple of days ago where I had a day mapped out. One of these things that happens when folks who like to optimize, what Nassim Taleb would call the tourist approach to a holiday, where you have everything mapped out beautifully, except the plan, whilst optimized, is quite fragile. Any potential disruptions to your plan, a connecting flight or missing a train, and then suddenly all that meticulous work falls apart. It's fragile to what he would describe as black swan events. It never really struck me as an apt metaphor, having grown up in Western Australia where there are black swans aplenty. but I guess the metaphor of a black swan is that people thought that swans could only be white, and then lo and behold, they discovered a black swan, and thus, it's a metaphor for quite extreme, unexpected change that perhaps breaks the known categorization and thus all the optimization around it. I had this plan for the day. I had cafes. I had it mapped out. I was going to get a walk in between a meeting at one particular cafe, go for a walk, another meeting, go for a walk, have lunch, go for a walk, have another meeting. And there I was having lunch, quite chuffed with myself. I finished up, I started walking to the meeting that I had at 1 o'clock. I looked down at my phone and I saw a missed call and a text message. And the text message, oh shit, what did it say? Let's actually just pull it up so I don't misquote. The text message was... And to my horror, I saw it was sent at 11:36 a.m. Hey, mate, I've got us a table. Would you like me to order you a drink? Then, sometime later, looks like you've been held up. No stress at all, mate. It happens. Smiley face. Hope all is okay! Exclamation mark. Let's reschedule at a better time in the next few weeks. Now, I don't know about you, but when I saw this, my ontology for a moment just fell apart. One of the things that make horror films so effective, particularly Eastern horror, is there is this breaking of reality, and it's in these ruptures where, when you see in horror like characters glitching into reality, or things morphing, or just this surrealness, like that for a brief moment I experienced a kind of existential horror and dread where I realized that despite my meticulous planning, I had somehow missed this meeting. And this is a meeting with a friend, my friend Adam, who I haven't seen for a while, and I've been really looking forward to it. Of all the meetings, that was the one that I was looking forward to most. And, you know, you can hear in the actual text, there's already a proactive reassurance, right? So what I want to honor here is the proactive empathetic acuity that Adam had to realize that upon, to know that upon my realizing that I had missed this meeting, it is very likely that I would begin a little spiral of despair. I mean, Adam, I guess, sensed that perhaps there's a risk that Jason will feel terrible about this, and I want to do what I can to just assure him it's okay. The irony being, of course, if the roles were reversed, that was a role that I'd, of course, play as well. In fact, a perverse delight of mine is actually being situated at a cafe and then realizing that the meeting I had planned, you know, is not going to happen because they either forgot or it got cancelled. It delights me because suddenly I find myself at a cafe with an hour up my sleeve, and that's always appreciated. But I, in reverse, I really appreciated this gesture of what I would consider proactive empathetic acuity. So of course, like I read the text message, but I barely read it, right? Because I was just mortified, and instantly, even though it was an hour and a half later, I instantly called Adam. He was warm, grounded, understanding, reassuring. And he also had, because he knows that, you know, simple platitudes and reassurance aren't enough. So he gave me an example of, he said, look, I totally get it. I've had this thing with a meeting with someone in America, and we've set it up twice, and both times I just missed it. And you know, these things happen, and I just, the kind of the empathy, the grounded example of a related experience, and this warm, grounded, we're fine, and I, you know, I'm trying to follow my sword. This is perhaps a little bit dramatic on my behalf. I needn't have so much chagrin. It's just when these things happen, I kind of like to lean into the drama of it, and it's kind of exorcising with an O of any of the kind of I guess there's a part of me that activates that's punitive, or there's a part of me that feels deep remorse or shame or something. But just to kind of like just to enact it and just to kind of lean into the drama rather than kind of suppress it and let it smolder, to actually give into it. And Adam was a great dance partner for that. And we agreed that we'd find a time. And so I've lost my part in the text message. I then texted him after, because I still had walking to do, and so I was able to process this. I texted him and said, man, thanks for being so productively reassuring. I've had this happen to me, and it's been fine, but when I'm the perpetrator, I feel terrible. I really appreciate your proactive empathetic acuity here. You've saved me a week from deep... you saved my week from a deep spiral. Tomorrow before 11 a.m. or after 1 p.m., and blah, 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 I gave some time so we could meet. And then he replies, you're very welcome, mate. In the scheme of things, an honestly confused calendar mix-up between friends is the lowest of the most inconsequential things there is. Wednesday, 10 a.m. can work. That's in an hour. So I'm about to go actually properly meet with Adam, which is about a 40-minute walk for me. So I'm going to wrap this podcast up in a tick. But the reason I'm bringing this up is there is this word that I've been resonating with a lot in recent times. And this word is conviviality or convivial. And it pertains to an essay, and I forget his name, Ivan Ilok or something. I can't remember. He wrote an essay on convivial technology. Convivial technology is technology that, you know, gets out of the way of the human relationships, the emergent, if I wax poetic a little bit about convivial technology, Or even the word convivial. If something is convivial, there is a good kind of generative, warm, emergent, high faith, relational cheer, and a groundedness, and it's there's a togetherness in convivialness, in conviviality, and convivial tech therefore supports this and recedes to the background. It gets out of the way. Convivial tech is stuff that we can repair. Convivial tech does not atomize us. It doesn't isolate us. It doesn't individualize us. It doesn't feed us content that makes us more scared, more fearful, more hateful to each other. It does just the opposite. And if you think about it, then most of the technology that we use nowadays, not all, but a lot of it, is not convivial. It does the opposite. And where possible in these times of heightened tension, heightened political polarization, lowered trust, I think it's worth doing our best to embody conviviality. And that means extending good faith to each other, having curiosity, empathy, warmth for each other. It means being a bit more proactive and kind. It means assuming good intent. It means that even if someone has a stance that you disagree with, you search for the common ground. It's really tricky, I mean, because there's some things that I just, you know, when it comes to the mass starvation of children, like I can't agree with that. When it comes to supporting genocide, I can't agree with that at all. I don't even know what to do there. But I also know that mass media, social media, and a lot of the things that we have, via the structures of their incentives, have steered us in a direction that is not convivial. I've experienced the diminishment of compassion, of curiosity, of empathy, of a desire to lean into challenge. And what instead I see is people seeking the quick, the easy, the safe, the comfortable, the familiar. This is the default now, the option we choose automatically in the absence of viable alternatives. But there are viable alternative options. We just need to search for them. And we just need to lean into the inconvenience of embodying them. So I'm about to go for a walk. The cafe that I'm meeting with Adam is near the Abbotsford Convent, which is where Kim and I walk Snorri, our little chihuahua. So it's looking like it's going to be a lovely day. I then have a meeting with a friend of mine who does some pretty great work at Miro. We're going to have a whiskey and ailment. And then I have a meeting with a potential client over a dinner and stuff. So I can't complain. It's a nice day. I can't complain, but I want to. I want to complain about the yearning that I have to do deep work, to just disappear and go hermit mode and write my book for you. And at the same time, I remember telling of this desire maybe 10 years ago to a friend. It would have been 11 years ago, actually, because I was writing How to Lead a Quest. And the friend reminded me of this myth about the person who desired to write with no distractions whatsoever. And so the wish was granted, and they had this place upon the moon, which was all clean and still and sterile, and no sound, no distractions whatsoever. And in that, in suddenly being in that place, of course, the wish was for variance. It was for animacy. It was for life. It was for friction. It was for tension. It was for conflict. It was for challenge. It was for all the things that life itself grants us. And so my wish for you in this little podcast is that you might come to somehow appreciate the various frictions, the oddities, the tensions, the challenges, the vexations that life throws our way. If we can learn, or at least in my instance, remember how to dance with these, then whole new worlds blossom open. Thank you for listening, and I wonder how these short form podcasts go, whether you like them. I've activated comments now on foxwizard.com. So I might call this conviviality. If you look up conviviality, the post, and if you liked it, leave me a nice note. If you don't like it, don't let me know. But if you do like it, let me know. That'd be wonderful encouragement and very convivial on your behalf too. All right, that's all from me. Have a nice day.